Shabbat Shalom. I've actually given a title to the Torah portion for the morning. It's Matot, tribes is the actual parasha for this week. I'm titling it Immovable and Immutable, something about the nature of God and something we learn about him through this parasha. Matot means tribes, and this particular parasha takes us through Numbers chapter 30 through 32. And here in chapter 30, Moses has summoned the leaders of the tribes of the entire nation, and he has important instructions to give them, specifically about the sacredness of fulfilling one's vows. You know, we just prayed and we acknowledged that God's word comforts us when we're afflicted, but you know it also afflicts you when you're comfortable. I think this is one of those parashas. The sacredness of fulfilling one's vows. God commands the absolute necessity of making good on our oaths when invoking his name, and makes provision for the annulment of a woman's vow, if necessary, either by a father or a husband due to impulsiveness. Now, you might wonder why these commandments come right in the middle of Numbers, which is otherwise a long historical narrative. Why all of a sudden is it interrupted with certain commandments? Now, of course, the making of promises isn't something to be taken lightly. And after all, how can you have any semblance of society if nobody can be trusted by what they say? Psalm 15 opens with the question, O Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? And who may dwell on your holy hill? And the answer is given of a godly man, a description of a godly man. And in verse 4 it says, he swears to his own hurt and does not change. In other words, even if something he promised will require him to take a loss, the godly man will make good on his word. But why insert a statute about fulfilling or nullifying oaths right here in the middle of everything? Well, you see, not only is the principle of fulfilling one's vows a matter of integrity before God, and Israel, of course, was expected to reflect God's holiness through their conduct, but beyond that, the taking of vows affects the lives of other people. One possibility that's been suggested for this annulment clause is that some of Israel's young, unmarried girls were taking vows of lifelong celibacy out of their disgust over the recent behavior of the Israeli men in the Baal Peor fiasco. Many Israeli men had been seduced by the Moabite women and willingly took part in their filthy and repulsive sacrifices. But if an unmarried girl were to take a lifelong vow of celibacy, it would require her father to support her for the rest of her life. That's an enormous financial and emotional burden. Such a vow, think about this, such a vow left intact might also mean no grandchildren, and then you have no continuity of that family in Israel, not to mention property and land inheritance. So taking a vow doesn't just affect the person who takes the vow. It affects others around them. Now, those who bristle at the idea of men having authority over women in the annulment of vows might want to bear two things in mind. Of course, no, I know that's none of you. We're all okay. First of all, no such provision existed for men. If a man took a vow in the name of the Lord, he could not be released from it without incurring guilt. He was bound by it no matter how difficult the vow proved to be. And number two, Moses prefaced this by saying, this is the word which the Lord has commanded. This is not some, you know, Moses-based patriarchal prejudice. This is from the mouth of the Lord. Now, you may not like it, but God isn't asking for your approval of his commandments and statutes and ordinances. They are what they are. Messiah Yeshua warned us against swearing oaths. He said, you've heard that that the ancients were told you shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. But I say to you, and I should make mention that as we continue our way through the Sermon on the Mount. Pretty soon we're going to be coming up to this section where Yeshua says, you've heard, but I say to you, he, as the Messiah, has the final right to interpret Torah for all mankind. You have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. But I say to you, make no oath at all, but let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. And anything beyond these is of evil. I suggest that this principle transcends the issue merely of our fulfilling vows. Let's take it two steps further. First, we need to watch what we say in general. And at all times, we are Messiah's ambassadors, and our conduct and our speech reflects on him, for better or for worse, in the sight of other people. Wise King Solomon once wrote, "Do not be hasty in word or impulsive in thought to bring up a matter in the presence of God, for God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few." Second, we should be faithful to make good on our word without having to take a vow. If we say we're going to do something, we need to do it. Some people are so reliable that if they tell you they're going to do something, you don't have to think about it again. You just know that it's going to be handled. On the other hand, others are so untrustworthy that even with a 30-page signed contract, you're not really sleeping very well, wondering whether they're going to fulfill it. What kind of person are you when it comes to fulfilling your agreements and your commitments? In chapter 31, God commands Israel to exact what he calls his vengeance on the Midianites. They were to be annihilated and their cities burned. Why? Because they had sought Israel's demise. It was the Midianites who had conspired with Moab to lure Israel by sending out these beautiful women to entice them to sacrifice to Baal. That idea came courtesy of Balaam, for which he is remembered in the scriptures for all times as a wicked man. We find out in this chapter that Balaam was put to death in the course of that battle. He had allied himself with Israel's enemies and justly suffered their fate. We should emphasize to our children the importance of wisely choosing their friends. For better or worse, our friends and our associates influence us, and to a great extent, they impact the trajectory of our future. In the aftermath of that battle, our people gathered a staggering amount of plunder. But the most startling fact of all was that Israel didn't lose a single soldier. There was no doubt in anybody's mind that this was the hand of God. Despite Israel's great sin at Baal Peor, God did not abandon us. We were given a fresh opportunity to serve him. In gratitude for those things, our people brought a lavish offering to Adonai, which was the proper thing to do. It's right to show appreciation when you're helped. How much more when you are rescued from your enemies? And how much more than that when rescued from sin and death and an eternity of disgrace? Are you demonstrating genuine thankfulness to God for what he has done for you? In chapter 32, the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh asked to settle in the land east of the Jordan. Their apparent reluctance to cross over and join their brothers in subduing the Canaanites angered Moses. Such a request might have the same disheartening effect on the people as the bad report of those 10 spies. So this was something that was very dicey. But an agreement was reached. Moses said that they could set up their homesteads there and leave their wives and children and livestock there, but he insisted that their men of fighting age accompany their brothers across the Jordan and help them drive out the Canaanites. Afterwards, they could return to their land, settling in Gilead. The 2.5 tribes agreed to those terms. Now, looking back and in closing, the Midianites, The Moabites, Balak, and Bilam all made the same fatal mistake. They took sides against the descendants of Abraham. They chose to be adversaries to God's people. And there are nations and there are leaders even today doing the very same, making the very same mistake, both in the religious realm and the secular realm. For some, it is an indifferent, uncaring attitude towards Israel and the Jewish people, including, I'm sad to say, some prominent evangelical leaders. Others actively seek Israel's destruction and even boast about it. We are seeing it played out in the news daily. Evidently, those who would destroy the Jewish people haven't read Moses and the prophets. Just as God would have us be faithful to our vows, he intends to be faithful to his. And he vowed that Israel will always be a people before him. Those who imagine otherwise are facing a rude awakening from the hand of an unchanging God, whose gifts and callings are irrevocable. I wouldn't want to be in their shoes on his day of reckoning.